In our gospel reading, we hear Jesus say, "You must be ready." Simple words. But that word "must" is a defining quality of what it means to be a Christian. Jesus isn't saying, "You can be ready, take a vacation." No, it's, "You must be ready." A quality that defines a state of our own being, to be ready. And Jesus also says to envision this to be ready like a master who is going to return to the house. His house. Not our house, his house. Which intrigues me for a moment because it makes me wonder. To return to his house makes me wonder about returning to a house that was previously inhabited by that master. And so if we look in the reading in Genesis, we read about a time when God did inhabit the house. And we read that, "Then the man and his wife heard the sound of the Lord God as he was walking in the garden in the cool of the day." That sounds beautiful. God was present within mankind and without in the beauty of the creation. And then there was some temptation, and mankind fell to this good and evil, and the judgment that we continue to eat from. And this tree is something that is very alluring, but it's pretty much kind of a defining quality, to name it, about our ego and the way our minds get enraptured in thinking about so many wonderful things in terms of itself. We reference everything in terms of our own sense. What we like, what we dislike, we judge it. It's good, it's evil, it's bad, it's wrong, it's right. So, and I'm not saying that's inappropriate, but I'm saying that we appropriate all of that to ourselves. In a sense, kind of kick the master out of the house, although maybe the master left, I don't know. But we began to take over some of the rooms in the house, the living room, the kitchen. We started feeding ourselves and started enjoying some of the things that we like, and not including the one who's given it to us, the true master. God is always offering, supplying, and continually replenishing. And so there's an invitation here to wonder about, are we true servants, or have we pretty much taken over this house and put our name on the front door and said, you know, "Rodrigo's house, call first if you're going to come." And actually does, I think God does have a cell phone. I would wonder about that in a moment here. So the invitation is to consider how we can, as servants, allow more a reflection of who the true owner of this house is, and to make some space for that owner to find comfort when the owner comes, when that master returns. So this house that we currently inhabit is filled with many things that we love, that we like, and of course we kick out the things we don't like. But a lot of it is consumed by so much of our day-to-day routines. I don't know how about you, but I feel this is probably the busiest culture that has ever existed on this planet. I don't know how I could do anything more. Every time I get texts from, you know, my kids' friends' mom saying, "Could they have a play date?" I'm like, well, I guess the nice dad wants to say yes, and then party wants to say no. Let's leave them more space. But no, I keep getting involved in activities. And these things aren't bad or good. They're just activities. And the invitation is for me to look at my role as a servant to include and make space for more of where the master can participate, if from afar, so to speak. Because it doesn't feel like the master's come back to this house yet. You know, when we have about 30, 40 odd houses here, you know, how full is our house? How busy are we with all the activities? And then how much have we kept the master in relationship with us in these responsibilities? The invitation is to include God in more of our daily routines. You know, we often think, oh, God doesn't want to be bothered with me going down to Walgreens just to go and pick up a prescription for some, you know, aspirin or some, you know, ibuprofen for my kids or my wife. But that's actually the ego speaking. It's putting ourselves before God. As servants, how much is ours and how much do we want to rely upon, lean upon, and be in relationship with the master, with the owner, with the one that we are to look towards for guidance, for help. We all have challenges, anger challenges, you know, patience, compassion. We look at the number of different opportunities that God invites us to be more Christ-like, more loving, more generous. And we think of our faults and where we are and how much lack we have. And we think about, we can ask for God to help with us in those terms, our regular prayers. And so we can, and we do, include God in that. And so if we take a drive down to the Walgreens, Walmart, if we go and make our daily efforts, we can include God in those daily routines. And it's simple. We don't have to make it a grandiose thing. We can just simply offer it and say, God, you know, I'm making this effort as an offering to you. It's not so matter what you say. It's that relationship. It's that calling upon and including God in our regular daily activities. If it may be some of these challenges I was speaking about, maybe it's anything from the DSM book, all of those difficulties we have, are we carrying them on our own? Or are we crying out for help? Are we asking for help? I have a quote here from a ninth century Sufi teacher from Iraq named Sal al-Tustari. And he writes, God Most High hath brought forth creation and said, entrust me with your secrets. If you do not do this, then look toward me. If you do not do this, then listen to me. If you do not do this, then wait at my door. If you do none of this, at least tell me your needs. And that's where we can begin. That's where we can always remain as we may be with the other ways that we might be with God, through meditation, mindfulness practices, waiting at God's door, listening to God, looking towards God. We can tell God our needs. Just this morning I was doing dishes. I said, oh, God, we need to do the dishes. You know, they're not going to get done, so let's get to it. Simple things. And that includes God in this relationship. What it does is actually it makes more space for the master of the house to find a little more room. There was one woman that I was listening to one of her dreams, and she had a dream where she had an apartment. Well, it was her apartment, but she opened the window and she started throwing all the furniture out of the house, out of her apartment. And her heart was definitely open toward God. And not that we have to throw everything out of our house, but it's a metaphor for throwing all the things that we're attached to, that which we want to hold on to and say, it's doing to do it our way. You know, God, I love you, but you know, I want to keep this. I don't want to let go. It's too personal. It's too meaningful. But that doesn't mean we can't include God in that, what we hold. Thank God, this is something that's dear to me. This is precious to me. And God is holding that with me because it's precious to me and it's dear. This woman was a nun, so part of her practice was clearing out the space. The invitation for us, though, is to invite God in all of the regular activities. And it's not a difficult task. Swedenborg, in this quote here, speaks about something like this. This is from Apocalypse Explained, number 739. He writes, for the sensual man, the worldly man, supposes that he knows everything and that nothing escapes him. But it is not so with the celestial man, who is convinced that he knows nothing from himself, but from the Lord, and that what he does know is so insignificant as to be scarcely anything compared to what he does not know. We grow up, we go to school, we get these great degrees next to our names, master's, PhD, or high school graduate, whatever it may be. We learn so many things. But who is it? Is it still us inhabiting the different rooms in the house? Or are we thanking God for this, the gifts of what we've learned, and what we've come to become through God's grace and God's effort in us? Just a week ago, I was down in San Diego, and there was a family that we know we're visiting. They have a boy they adopted from Ethiopia 2 years ago. And he was 5, and now he's 7. And so he went to his first vacation Bible camp. And the woman who was leading it asked the group of children, would anybody like to come forward and maybe say something that they're grateful to from this camp? Something that's touched their soul or their hearts. And this little boy raised his hand because he's always so eager. And he comes up to the front, and he had two things he wanted to say. And the first one is, he said, I want to thank God because God taught me to speak English. Precious. Oh, it was just beautiful. The simple way that he attributes to God, the openness of a child's heart and the mind to learning something which comes naturally to us. And the second thing was is that he said, and he knows Moses. Yes, God does know Moses. There was a book that I've been reading called Prayer of the Heart in Christian and Sufi Mysticism. And it's a beautiful book that speaks about the ways that this master of the house still stays in touch with us, still communicates with us. And sometimes things respond quickly and instantly. It's like a text. You know, oh, it's a quick one. But sometimes it comes in like an email or you know, a little later, or maybe via regular U.S. postal mail. But he writes that what communicates with us is what touches our souls, what speaks to us in the deepest part of our being. And it might be a symbol or an image that we see. It could be words that we read when we're reading a book or a poem. It's like God's just speaking directly to me. It could be a dream where some meaning is unfolding over time. Could be a fragrance, a smell, or music that touches our hearts. Also, if we're very busy in our house, and it might be kind of noisy, and we might not be able to hear it. And sometimes we won't hear because God, the author writes, speaks subtly, and sometimes deeply. And to hear some of those deeper and more subtle messages, we really need to spend time paying attention within to hear those. One of the Brother Lawrence is somebody who was a monk back in the 1700s. And I like his words just to apply them in our modern life because they're so, it's such a beautiful image of what can come forward when we pretty much began to rely on more of the master's help as the servants we were invited to become. He says, the time of work does not with me differ from the time of prayer. In the noise and clatter of my kitchen, while several persons are at the same time calling for different things, I possess God in as great a tranquility as if I were upon my knees at the Blessed Supper. And for those of you who know, Brother Lawrence was one who just began offering everything that came forward that he had to do in his responsibilities as a monk, which was pretty much in the kitchen because he really wasn't good for much else. He just kept offering it back to God. And he says, for every time that his mind wandered and he caught his mind wandering, he would return it back to that relationship. God is helping with the dishes. God is helping taking kids to school. God is helping me deal with my son who's having trouble at his class, or maybe getting into drugs. Maybe my daughter's getting a little too intimate with her boyfriend, and she's only in middle school. Any number of challenges that we work with on a regular basis. Maybe it's trying to just cover the bills at the end of the month. You know, God wants to be involved and included in everything that we do. And again, it's our ego that keeps God from being involved because we can do it. This is a self-help society. Everything is a DIY. That's our summer model for my kids. It's like, you're going to make your own cereal. You make your own lunch. I'm taking a break because they're only 9 and 11 and they need to start helping out more. But, you know, we become a DIY society where we rely on ourselves for everything, and pretty much we depend on ourselves for everything, which is necessary. But to realize, as Swedenborg writes, a celestial person is one who acknowledges that it's not just us. In fact, it's very little of us, if anything, because God is the one that's coming through. And Swedenborg says, God is the one that's showing that love towards the child as a parent, that patience, that compassion, as much as we can let through, or that strong hand, the firm words. Jesus says, you must be ready. And he uses the words to be watchful, to be waiting. And that implies an ever-present awareness. One practice that I like from the Buddhist Vietnamese monk named Thich Nhat Hanh is mindfulness that he uses with bells. And every time he hears a bell go off, which we don't have church bells anymore. I guess we do ring it once in a while. Or an alarm clock. Or, you know, some people set their phone alarm to beep regularly. Or a phone. That bring. I guess it doesn't make those sounds now. Now they sing, they make music. But that's an opportunity to become present and mindful in what's the moment about. Even in the midst of our day, working at the desk, you know, our boss may expect us to work long hours into the nights and weeknights and into the weekends. You know, how do we manage all of this? You know, God, help me. How can I handle this? I got a family at home. I need to go home and cook dinner, and yet my boss expects this of me. We cry out. We pray. The invitation is endless in every moment of our day. Some of the things that I have found in my regular day during school year is making lunches for my kids. So making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. The kids still like them, thank goodness, because it's easy to make. But it's like, oh, God, I need your help. We're going to make sandwiches today. And so I'm making this, and I'm thinking, God, do you like PBJs? I started laughing. It's like, well, my son does, so of course you do. And it's this laughter and this sweetness. It just builds and grows. And after a while, you start smiling in your own chores that you have to do at 6 or 7 in the morning. Simple things kind of become lighter. And the author of the book, Prayer of the Heart, was saying, you can tell the difference with the discrimination between the way God speaks to us versus the way that our ego is speaking to us. When it's our heart that is touched, or when our heart is opened to embrace something, to embrace a challenge, that is from a divine source. Whereas the ego takes sides. Okay, this is better, good, remember that judgment in the garden? And that's wrong, that's bad, as opposed to, all right, there is something here that's maybe perhaps bigger than me I can learn from. And rather than judge, separate, cast out, to then welcome and embrace with a more compassionate approach. That doesn't mean it's appropriate for some things that have to be, that need to be, you know, identified as inappropriate. But it's not to chastise the child or the other person, and to acknowledge that that person is loved nonetheless. There is a quote I would like to share from Swedenborg. Well, actually, let me mention, Saul also says, at one point, the same Sufi teacher was saying, people are invited as, that quote he said, tell me your needs. People we're telling God our needs, our faults, all of our challenges, or inviting God to participate in our life. And he says, for some people, there is a need to be a little more aware, a little more open to God's presence. And it's simple, like a daily remembrance that becomes a practice of a continual remembrance. There's many different practices that people can do, but simple mindfulness in what you're doing. Yes, we have a mind, we have to think, we have to work with the people that we're engaged with. But a regular mindfulness, as we work with that, grows to become something within us that becomes even unconscious without us realizing it. But as we feel a yearning to grow in this relationship with the Master, we can open up to more without realizing that we're doing that. And that's God working through in us in ways we don't even know. And Swedenborg has a quote that I'd like to end with that speaks to that. This is from Arcana Celestia, number 5130. As regards faith, anyone who receives and possesses faith is constantly mindful of the Lord. This is so even when he is thinking or talking about something other than the Lord, or else when he is carrying out his private, public, or family duties. Though he is not directly conscious of his mindfulness of the Lord while he is carrying them out. Indeed, that mindfulness of the Lord present in those who possess faith governs their whole being.